It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Lawmakers passed a skinny capital budget during their third special session last week. At $1.4 billion, it's the smallest spending plan in 17 years. What does this mean for Alaska's construction economy and other support jobs? There's still work to be done on a future fiscal plan for the state. Is that happening? Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott join us to discuss their long-term ideas for economic stability today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hopefully I got all my stumbles out in the open there and things will be smoother from now on. Alaska has a $2.5 billion budget gap and no long-term plan yet to address the current fiscal mess the state is in. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are in the studio of KTOO in Juneau to discuss this and a lot of other issues facing the state. Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Mallott, hello and welcome.
Good morning, Lori.
Thanks so much for being with us today. From our partners, with our partners in Juneau. You can also join the conversation, Alaskans. Do you have ideas for how the state can get on firmer fiscal ground? 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email your questions and comments to talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's start with some of the news of the week. Governor, what's your reaction to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke's message to Alaska senators that energy and other policies could be hurt by Senator Murkowski's health care vote? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I was certainly disappointed to see that. And I, on those issues, I certainly defer a bit to our federal folks. They are there day in and day out on our delegation, and they hear and know things that I don't have access to. So I have enjoyed our relationship with Secretary Zinke, and I hope that that good relationship will continue on beyond the issue of health care.
Senator Murkowski sort of downplayed it and said she didn't think that it was a threat, that he was just relaying a message. Senator Sullivan said that it was a troubling message, so a bit different takes on it. But Senator Murkowski is the chair of the Energy Committee. She's also the chair of the subcommittee that gives them their budget. So really, when you're looking at the two statements on it, which direction do you think seems more realistic as far as what his comments may have meant?
Well, I think only time will really tell. Everybody can sort of have speculation of what that's going to mean, but time will tell, and hopefully things will move on and things will be resolved one way or the other, that particular chapter will be behind us. So, I don't know who is most correct, whether it's Senator Sullivan or Senator Murkowski, but someplace in between, perhaps, is where we land.
Your administration will need to rely on President Trump's administration on a variety of issues. For example, the state received a 3-year waiver to fund its reinsurance program. It will need for that program to be renewed. How concerned are you about either the effect of Senator Murkowski's vote on health care or just of President Trump's plan to sort of let the Affordable Care Act implode, as he said? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I've certainly seen, and I've been involved with a number of governors, other governors, on a bipartisan effort to find out, is there a solution out there? And I think that there's an effort to work, and I know that the governors have committed to do this. I recently at the National Governors Association, and and participated in a roundtable discussion with 33 other governors about health care. And so I think that we are offering to weigh in and be a part of the solution and coming up with something that that we think works for the states as well as the are the residents of our respective states. So, I mean, there's no question the cost of health care has to come down, and we need to approach that as well and look at ways. And we're doing that within the state as far as what we can do. So, you know, I think that I hope that the discussion or the negotiation is not over because I don't think there's a solution really in front of us right now.
Earlier this morning on NPR on Morning Edition, Senator Bernie Sanders was on and said he will introduce a health care plan this fall that would create a Medicare for all single-payer system. Do you think this is the right direction for controlling health care costs?
You know, I don't know that that's the right, but I think that those that have solutions, I think all solutions should be brought forward, all solutions, and take from that. You know, I think it's going to be a bipartisan effort. We see that in the at the gubernatorial level. We see that with different states coming together. We've seen letters signed by different, you know, Governor Sandoval in Nevada, who was actually was being considered as a U.S. Supreme Court justice at one point in time, and other spectrums. You see, you know, folks from the Democratic side of the aisle that in the governor's roles that are coming together. So I think that I wouldn't. I don't know what the single what the answer is, quite honestly. But I know that I believe it'll come from a bipartisan effort.
Senator, go ahead, Lieutenant Governor Milan, please.
On both health care and the discussion between or the comment of Secretary Zinke and the conversation with Senator Murkowski, it reminds me when Secretary Hickel was a brand new Secretary of the Interior way, way back. And there was a significant issue affecting Alaska voiced by an individual named Edith Green. And Secretary, brand new Secretary Hickel asked famously, "Who is Edith Green?" And it turned out that Edith Green was Congresswoman Edith Green, the chairman of the House Interior Committee, who controlled the Department of the Interior's budget. And ultimately, Secretary Hickel and Edith Green became good friends and worked very closely together. The Congress is a completely separate branch of our government, and the role of Senator Murkowski as chairman of the Energy Committee and an increasingly independent voice in the United States Senate, I believe ultimately will bode well for Alaska.
All right. Thank you for that take. That was Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are on the line from Juneau, from the studios of KTOO in Juneau, and we're talking about a wide range of issues. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422, 550-8422, or you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Senator Sanders also said in the interim, before he unveils this plan for a single-payer system, that there should be a Medicare option, public option, for states that only have one health insurer offering plans. That would be Alaska. It would allow people to opt in on a public option for Medicare. What do you think about that?
We know, as I've consistently said, is that I want to make sure that whatever solution is there is one that doesn't hurt Alaskans. So, you know, it's interesting that Senator Sanders as well as President Trump have both singled out Alaska and acknowledged their high cost of health care. Acknowledge that we have only one insurer, so it's the good news is the bad news is that we are the highest cost in the nation, but the good news is that it's being acknowledged and recognized, and so that gives me some comfort that when the dust settles on this issue, that Alaska will do everything it can to make sure that Alaska does not get hurt in the process, and I know that's the goal of the delegation as well, but It is the fastest rising cost, I believe, of living in Alaska today is the cost of health care.
All right. Thank you, Governor Walker. Let's move back to the state level. You said you plan to offer a new proposal for a tax. Can you tell us a little more about that? Will you call a special session for lawmakers to pass Senate Bill 26, the bill to draw money from permanent fund earnings to pay for state government, if legislators don't pass a tax bill?
Well, you know, when we, you know, we haven't had – the state has been drawing from – the legislature has been drawing from savings since 2012. It's the last year that you have to reach back that far. The last year they did not have to do that. So since 13 on, it's been, you know, the budget has been funded by from our savings account, and we've gone through at this point approximately $14 billion in savings while trying to find a fiscal solution. We've reduced the spending by 44%. We continue to look ways of efficiencies, additional reductions in different programs. We've closed 40 facilities across the state, sold off equipment, planes, boats, things that we can sell. We have stopped about 80 different programs that we have had before that we've stopped those programs. So, you know, we've done about quite an awful lot on that side of the ledger. Now it's time to figure out how we're going to pay for the services we provide in Alaska. So that's where we are now. Right now, it's like I said, since 2013, we've been paying for them out of savings, and that account is pretty much depleted at this point. So we can't continue to do that. So we have to find out what source of revenue is going to be. And so every other state in the nation has to have some sort of broad-based revenues, and Alaska, we have to look at that now.
All right, let's go to the phones for just a moment. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are on the line from KTOO in Juneau. We're going to go now to Aniak. Herman is in Aniak. Hi, Herman.
Yeah, good morning. I kind of disagree with the whole plan you're taking, Governor. Medicaid expansion, sounds good, but Free health care for everybody. Who's going to pay for all that? And by reducing the cost and not voting to repeat of Obamacare, she destined a lot of people to be stuck in failing. Obamacare is just spiraling. There's hardly any more insurance companies in many states. But the real issue you're talking about health care and the economics in the state, the real issue, the governor, is you think you should think about the 15,000 Alaskans that are living below the poverty level. They're counting on that permanent fund to pay for some of their health costs. It's not only the 1,200 all of us. We pool our money together in the families. We used to pay for our house expenses. We used to pay for heating fuel. And if you guys are leave that money or give it back, the state is rich. They have $60 billion in the permanent fund. They have $16 billion reserve. They have a lot of money coming in. And yet, you guys are not considering how, if you give that money back, like in Anya, it would be $600,000. That money would go to the business, and it would help to pay the salary for jobs. You guys should give that money back. You can afford it. It's wrong to tell people you're not going to touch it, and then after elected, to take the money away and say, exactly what you get, Pajati, I don't take it all. And the audacity to tell us that you have to spend it for us to save it for us. To spend it for us, we don't have it. There's enough to it for the recall, but there's an election coming up. You can recall, Lisa McCluskey can be recalled. And some of these guys like Lyman and others can be recalled. You know, a lot of these native senators, they're being used. They're just being used. It's sad to see that movie, Kennedy's America. That's a Democratic Party. They're used by the minorities.
So, Herman, let's let the governor and lieutenant governor respond. You've laid out a lot of things. I do want to clarify that the expansion that was being discussed today is Medicare, not Medicaid, and no one is suggesting free health care for all. A plan would, of course, have to be paid for, and that what is something that remains to be seen is how a single-payer Medicare for all system type system would be paid for, but no one is suggesting that there would be free health care. So Governor Herman has laid out a lot of critique and criticism here. I'd like to give you a chance to respond now.
Sure. You know, when we came into office, the revenues in Alaska dropped by 80%. It's the biggest fiscal freefall in the history of our state, and I don't think anybody disputes that. And so we looked at the concern. One of the concerns we had was that if we made no adjustments or changes on the permanent fund, it would go. The numbers proved out that it would go away in a few short years of a high payout, and then be gone. And so I guess what we looked at is the longevity of we want to make sure it was available for generations, for, you know, the children and grandchildren that are throughout the state, and not just a few high payouts to right now. So that's, you know, why I made the decision. The most difficult decision I've ever made was to make that decision. But someone had to step up and be the leader on that. And, you know, we had it ultimately was legislative action this year that stepped up and did what I did last year, both the House and the Senate. And actually, the Senate did last year as well as this year. So, you know, if I didn't step up and do what I was asking the legislature to do, then that's not leadership. So I hear about that. I do hear a lot of people that say thank you for the future of that program. Thank you that our children and grandchildren will have a dividend, and maybe it's a more than the average of, you know, it wasn't that many years ago the dividend was in the $800, $900 level. It did jump up as a result of the stock market earnings to a higher amount for a year, and would have continued at that. But it would have also every indication we had is that it would the program would cease to exist, and we just felt that it was we had to make a tough decision. I did to make sure that we had the longevity into the next generation rather than just the next couple of years.
Well, let's talk about other revenue measures. Municipalities are considering sales tax and other measures. The Kenai Borough Assembly this evening will hold its first public hearing on the Kenai Mayor's proposal to impose an 8% bed tax on temporary accommodations throughout the borough. There is I'm looking at a document right now that was compiled by the Kenai Peninsula Borough staff looking at tax proposals in communities, municipalities across the state. The Matsu Assembly this evening will consider its own sales tax bill. There's a lot of these proposals, a form of trickle-down economics. As muni governments are considering this, what are your thoughts about this broader tax? Should it be a state-driven sales or income tax, or do you think that allowing the municipalities to kind of set their own tone and their own pace as far as taxation makes sense? What's the best mix here?
Well, I think that's going to be that's we're going to work on this summer to find out what is the best mix. But we know we've looked at initially we did not look favorably on sales tax just because for exactly what you've just said, Lori, is that a lot of local government, many local governments across the state, if not most, have a sales tax and use that as part of their funding vehicle in addition to property tax and others. So it really it sort of gets into their area. And if we stack a state sales tax on top of the local sales tax, it becomes a bit potentially onerous. So we have always used that as sort of our not as our first option on broad-based revenue. So, you know, maybe a bit of a combination of that. We've certainly looked at the fuel tax, which hasn't been adjusted since late 60s, I believe, is the last time it was adjusted in Alaska. So, and it's in a significant way anyway. So I think we're going to look at a number of things and see what taking into consideration the financial impact of, you know, anytime you extract revenue from an economy, you're going to have an impact on it. On the other hand, you know, we've got to pay for the services that are being provided, and so there's only so many revenue levers out there that can allow that to happen.
And state services are part of the entire fabric of meeting state constitutional obligation and other services that over time Alaskans have have believed are important to them. They exist all across the state. The governor often mentions that we're the only state that operates almost 250 airports, and it requires state funding in order for our airports to stay open. Certainly there is significant federal funding, but roads and schools and as has been mentioned, healthcare. No matter what the place and role and sense of service need that a municipality may have, there is still a significant state obligation in virtually every community, every region of our state. And so there needs to be a broad-based state revenue source or sources, and it needs to be fair and equitable across the state. And that's the balance that needs to be sought.
That was Lieutenant Governor Byron Mulott. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mulott are on the line from KTOO in Juneau. We're talking about Alaska's budget and the future. And we are going to go back to the phones. Sue is in Nome. Hi, Sue.
Hi, and thank you so much for taking my call. And it's really an honor to be able to speak with the governor and lieutenant governor. I really appreciate what the lieutenant governor just said about fairness. And it's because I feel we have a wonderful example for us in how to deal with this problem fairly. And that was the one created by our founding fathers, that we had diverse states of diverse sizes and populations. And so we have the Senate, where every state gets two senators, but we also have the Congress, where every state is represented based on their size. And when the PFD was cut in half, that impacted everybody from the very poorest child in our native villages to the very wealthiest individual in the state equally. Therefore, the only way to balance this fairly is to now have an income tax where people pay according to their ability to pay. Rural Alaska is in crisis, and I've lived here many years, and I don't really see a solution. And that everything that cuts from the PFD, and as would a sales tax, is going to have a way disproportionate impact on the places in this state that have the highest cost of living with the lowest income. And I feel that I find it actually shameful that our Congress, our legislature has yet to implement an income tax as a balance to the PFD. So giving you my vote for that, but I'm also asking, how can we persuade our legislators how unfair doing anything but an income tax at this point is to, across the state?
All right. Thanks, Sue, for those comments. Obviously very heartfelt. Governor and Lieutenant Governor, would you like to react to Sue's comments about an income tax?
Well, first, Sue's question, thank you for calling, and your question is a good one. And you, when you ask what you can do to influence your legislator, I would say contact them. I think that I think that's the best way to get the message across. Send them a note, send them an email, give them a call. So I think that's number one, that you do that. But you're right when you talk about, sort of equity and fairness. This isn't a math equation that you just make the numbers work. If you don't have the equity and don't have the fairness in there, then I liken it to if you laid a block wall and didn't put mortar in, didn't put the bond beam in, you didn't protect that wall, the integrity of that wall, just blocks on top of each other, it wouldn't last very long. So there needs to be that part of it. That's a critical part of it. And so it's not just the making the numbers work. It's really bringing in, adding in to make sure that there's equity and there's fairness in it. And so that's why we don't think it's an appropriate time to stop at this point, because we haven't solved the problem and we really haven't blended in the sort of the equity piece of it as well.
Some Alaskans won't see it or believe it for a while into the future. But when the governor vetoed the appropriation and cut it in half. He had also in the process vetoed a number of other very significant pieces of the budget at a time when we had a $4 billion budget deficit. Equity will be a continuing dividend into the future, and it can be a dividend driven by the returns of the permanent fund, while at the same time the permanent fund can provide a very significant percentage of our budgetary needs. But there still is a gap, and that needs to be covered, and it is the fairness and equity in that process that the governor and the legislature will need to wrestle with, have been wrestling with. In the meantime, we've burned through almost 90% of Alaska's savings now, and this is the year in which that decision has to be made.
All right. We are going to stick with the phones for just a moment before we're coming up on a short break here in a few minutes. But let's go to Cecilia in Anchorage. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. It's really commendable that you're addressing constantly this issue. I appreciate it. And the government people have been very visible. I lived for a few months in Juneau. And I realize it has precious real estate that needs it's underutilized. I have lived most of my life on high rises, bedrock for high rises, and it's wasted on low level, two three story buildings. You could build several high rises there, have income tax revenue all the year round, while the people just come for a few months. When I lived in the modest high-rise in Dallas, the real expensive high-rises across from me, they were only illuminated one-third of the year because that's how people use income property for many tax deductions and so forth. So you'll be getting that revenue. The capital really needs to move. You need to stop that draining bottle is back of people, you know, for whatever, for all the business, and bring it over here. Great problems demand great solutions. And also implement the multi-pronged approaches that other callers have mentioned and that you have already on your crosshairs. Plus, get a lottery going. The time has come to apply all these solutions at the same time, and we should be getting out of this hole just like Houston did. Houston wasn't the same problem. They had to diversify.
All right, we're having trouble hearing you, Cecilia, so we're going to let the governor respond to your ideas. Making comparisons to Texas, I'm not sure that really works, but Governor Walker, what are your thoughts?
Well, in Juneau, I've heard no discussion at all from legislators or otherwise about anything about relocating the capital from Juneau. So, if that was her Cecilia's question, I don't see that happening. She's right about diversification. We're doing some things about diversifying Alaska's income and economy, everything from agriculture, more things associated with fisheries, hopefully timber mining. So we need to expand those now. The vast majority of revenue has come from a single commodity, the price of oil, and now we see with where we are today, that's not sustainable. So we are looking at those changes. They're in the works. They don't happen overnight. You don't flip a switch and suddenly have a diversified economy. But you start off with, use that as a mindset and make those changes, and they're being made. So I think that's kind of the direction she was going.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take more calls and talk more about the future of Alaska's economy as talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in training programs from office administration to water and wastewater treatment. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Our guests today are Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. They're joining us from the studios of our partners, KTOO in Juneau. Governor, I want to get back to the phones in just a moment, but I want to get a question in here quickly about your potential ideas on reelection. What are the factors you'll use to make that decision? You said you probably will run. What are you weighing, and when will you make your decision public?
Well, we are really sort of just now finishing up. Yesterday, we finished up the capital budget as far as our role in the capital budget to get that out the door. And what we didn't want to do is sort of tangle up our decision going forward with the work that had to be done. There's a lot of work to be done as governor, and so I want to make sure that the timing is such that it doesn't deter us away from the job that we do every day. So I don't have a specific date or timeline of when that's going to take place. I think it'll certainly be this summer sometime. But as far as a hard date, I don't really have that today.
All right, you're not going to make news on the show today, I guess.
And in this instance, Lori, I hope the governor is not using the royal we.
And what are your thoughts, Lieutenant Governor, about your future plans?
Governor Walker and I just love this job because I have the opportunity to work with Governor Walker, and where he goes, I will go.
All right. Well, that sounds like an answer to me. So we're going to go back to the phones. Karen is in Talkeetna. Hi, Karen.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Did you have a question or a comment?
I had a comment, actually. First of all, I just wanted to thank Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Mallott for all their hard work in trying to establish a budget that's workable. And I kind of want to remind listeners about when Jay Hammond first brilliantly masterminded the permanent fund. We did have an income tax in Alaska, and he cautioned about losing that income tax because I think he had the vision to recognize that the price of fuel would fluctuate and that we needed to have some kind of a stable form of revenue for our state. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And so my statement would be that I think we do need to reinstate an income tax. It's the most equitable of all taxes in terms of taxing the people with the greatest income as opposed to, and the people with lesser incomes would not be so impacted. That would also include people who work on the North Slope and live elsewhere. I think that's been mentioned many, many times, but it's sort of alarming to think of all the revenue that could have been gathered over the history of Prudhoe Bay and getting oil, that resource, and all that income that has left our state. Relative to sales tax, I feel like that's a regressive tax because it does impact everyone equally regardless of income, and I appreciate what Sue, your previous caller, said about that. I do feel like it would be more appropriate to, relative to sales tax, to tax fuel and non-essential food items such as liquor and cigarettes. And I know a lot of people think that's a sin tax, but on the other hand, those kinds of things also do contribute a huge cost to health care. They take a huge toll on our emergency services, and consequently, I feel like it's appropriate to establish high taxes for those kinds of things as opposed to milk or bread, for example. And a seasonal sales tax would be especially appropriate because I live in a tourist town, and I'm amazed at how many tourists are absolutely flabbergasted that there is not a sales tax in Talkeetna. They expect to pay it, that we pay it when we go to other states.
Right. Okay.
And,
well,
those are my points. And
yeah.
I want to appreciate and thank Governor Walker and his staff for all the hard work they've been doing.
Thanks so much, Karen. Let's stay with the phones for just a moment. Jeff is in Anchor Point and I think may have similar comments about income tax and permanent fund. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Lori. Governor and Lieutenant Governor. Yeah, basically, I was wondering, could you sell that state income tax on giving the people a little bit more back on their permanent fund? And of course, these people are taking the money and running. Apparently, there's 20% plus minus out-of-state workers, and they're wearing the infrastructure out. And, you know, maybe if there's, you know, who knows, if a person could get the price of oil back up, and with the state income tax, you could take some of that money and maybe throw it into some green capital projects. And what about a state lottery?
All right. Well, thanks.
People are spending the money on that, you know, in the bars anyway.
Well,
I'd have more ideas, but I'll close there and maybe somebody else get on.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff and Karen, for your thoughts on income tax and maybe a seasonal sales tax. Governor Walker, you've talked about some of these issues before. I wanted to get to an email question from someone. Mark says, it seems like one of the keys to sustainability for Alaska is continued economic growth in the small business sector, particularly in rural Alaska. Does your administration have a strategy for encouraging economic development in our smallest communities? So what are your thoughts about that? What can be done to help stimulate the economy in rural Alaska, especially in light of the fact that the legislature just passed a very, very small capital budget, which will impact construction jobs and other spending in rural Alaska communities. What are your thoughts about that? And Lieutenant Governor, I'd welcome your ideas as well.
Well, let me begin with it's a good question. It's one that we look at constantly as far as what can we do to stimulate the economy. And certainly in rural Alaska is one of the challenges. And one of the biggest challenges in rural Alaska is really the cost of energy is a big issue. And most businesses, any kind of commercial activity is going to be energy have high energy needs. So we need to make sure that we have that we're addressing ways of bringing down the cost of energy. And there are a number of creative alternative energy projects, opportunities that are out there. We have hydrokinetic energy with turbines that are in a river that don't make energy, doesn't require a dam, but can harness some of the energy from the river. Groups that are doing that, there's different things on solar and on wind, but it has to be reliable and has to be affordable as well. The other is broadband. I mean, if you don't have ways of communicating in rural Alaska, it makes it tough to be able to carry on commerce, etc. So that's the other issue that is something that we look at, have been looking at for some time, as far as what are the best options on improving broadband and also making it more affordable. Sometimes what's paid in rural Alaska for internet access is can be higher at times, higher than their energy bill. So we need to make sure that we're making sure that it has an environment, a business environment, to be able to have commerce and have activities and development in that region. And the other is that on the resource development, I've had a number of things come across my desk where different companies are asking for certain things, and I have I've been consistent in saying you need to make sure that that you have local hire, not just Alaska hire, but also local hire in that region before I'll consider what it is that you're asking for.
Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott, did you want to add some ideas? Are you seeing creative thinking from Alaskans and realistic ideas about what other diversification we could look at for the state's economy?
Well, one of the frustrations to me with an 80% fall in oil prices and the similar impact on the state budget, which occurred at the time that Governor Walker and I took office, in many ways, all of the air was sucked out of the room relative to growing Alaska. We have spent three full legislative sessions since we've been in office wrestling with this issue, and we still have yet to close the gap. There has been some progress for sure, and I think, as the governor has said, all of the pieces are there. What we need is the courage and the will and the vision to take the next step. But we need to close the fiscal gap. We have had multiple downgrades in Alaska's credit rating. We need to do the things that allow both Alaskans and others who choose or are looking to invest here to say this is a good place to invest. This is a place in which we have confidence. This is a place with good schools. This is a place with good infrastructure. This is a place with good health care. This is a place that we want to raise our children. And it's a matter of choice. When Alaska is not growing and not acting every single day to grow our state, and we have been crippled in this regard in the past 3 years, that is so frustrating. Much of life is attitude and the sense that this is a good place. We can make Alaska a good place. And when we do that, then we can grow Alaska job by job. We don't need to wait for the next big boom. We don't need to wait for someone to come and save us. We can get to a place where every job matters, and we can grow Alaska a job at a time.
You know, let me add to that, Laurie, if I could.
Sure.
Also, is that, you know, it has to do with an attitude, I think, and there's the uncertainty that a fiscal gap creates is, I think, more significant than some people can appreciate. You know, as companies look at investing in Alaska or investing in something that's going to benefit activities in rural Alaska to create jobs, they also look at the financial wherewithal where they're investing. And if where they're investing, there's a fiscal gap that's been there since 2012, a structural gap that has not been fixed. I think they pause a bit when they look at doing that, and we've certainly heard that from different companies. So, one of the best things we can do on impacting jobs and you know opportunities in rural Alaska is fix Alaska. Is to fix the fiscal problem that we have, and then we can declare that's over and that we've moved beyond that, and our credit rating will come back again. I know it will. We've gone from the highest in the nation that you can have to among the lowest and during this period of time. And for one reason alone is that we still have the structural challenge of not having any broad-based revenue to help pay for the services that we provide. So it's up to us to fix. We can't point fingers at Washington on this one or someplace else. I think it's up to us to fix this one.
And I do want to get to some ideas about that. But first I want to talk about we were talking earlier about the capital budget. And one of the things that's within the capital budget is $7 million for an Arctic Strategic Transportation and Resources Project. We have a caller on the line who I think wants to ask a question about that. Lois is in Anchorage. Hi, Lois.
Hi, and thank you, Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott, for giving Alaskans an opportunity to speak with you. So I think both of you know I've worked for many years on the economics of mega projects in Alaska. And I wanted to say that it's great that you pulled back on the Kinnickarn Bridge and Juneau Access projects in the capital budget that you signed yesterday. But what I don't understand and I'm very concerned about is that the budget starts a new mega project process that's going to require hundreds of millions of dollars for Arctic Roads, as Lori mentioned, the A-STAR project, and $7 million is in the budget, the signed capital budget, and that's state money. And there hasn't been a public process that has allowed folks in the Arctic and elsewhere to weigh in on that expenditure and starting this project. So I wanted to ask what's going on, and will there be an opportunity to rethink this funding as more information becomes available to the public and people have a chance to weigh in?
All right, Lois, thanks for the question. Governor Walker.
Sure. Well, Lois, the that project, of course, there'll be a public outreach. It was done with outreach to the North Slope Borough and others in the region to talk about that. The purpose of that is that in Alaska, of course, we have our income has been 90% tied to the price of oil and the throughput of oil, and we sit with a mega project at the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline, which celebrates its 40th anniversary this year, and it's at 25% capacity. And, you know, exploration for oil on the North Slope requires, it's very limited in when it can be done, at what time of year. It has to be done with ice roads and whatnot. And you look at certainly a significant piece to help in our economy is greater throughput in that piece of infrastructure that's already been built, the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. So, you know, we aren't going to find another 1.6 million barrels of throughput without drilling more wells and having more access. So you look at places like Wyoming as an example. It's about the same size as the North Slope. In Wyoming, they have drilled 16,000 wells. On the North Slope, we've drilled approximately 500 wells. So we don't have access for responsible exploration up there in the summer months because you obviously don't build ice roads in the summer. With the warming temperatures, the ice roads are starting later and going away earlier. And so if we're going to take full advantage of the opportunity we have with what's already up there, we need to have more access to be able to do that. Now, the trade-off is we don't want to cause any sort of damage to lifestyles. And the villages that are there certainly could be impacted both positively and negatively. And so we will certainly take that into strong consideration and spend time with them in consultation about and do it in such a way that it's not a negative to them but a positive.
All right. Thanks so much. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take more questions and talk with Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
A Veterans Town Hall featuring Dr. Timothy Ballard will take place on August 10th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kenai Visitor and Cultural Center, 11471 Kenai Spur Highway. The VA welcomes frank and open discussions of veterans' concerns in all program areas. Time will be made available for individuals to address their concerns in one-on-one sessions. For more information, email samuel.hudson@va.gov. This message sponsored by the VA.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are our guests today. Governor, are you considering a fourth special session? And what are you hearing from lawmakers about? They were able to come to some consensus on a capital budget. Are you hearing that maybe the disagreements are changing about the way forward and that lawmakers are coming up with ideas? Or what do you think will have to happen next to get this longer-term budget situation resolved?
Well, I think there's no question it's going to take bipartisan participation. But, you know, Lori, what I saw, and we participated in the process as well, of course, on 111, on the tax credit legislation and closing out that program, that was no longer sustainable. When I saw it took place there was a lot of hard work by, you know, certainly Representative Tarr and Josephson and Senator Geisel coming together and others. I think Rep. Tarr said there were 25 separate sets of fingerprints on that solution, and I think that's a good thing. And so I've seen some collaboration. I think once it works on one, I think that they say, well, you know, the way we got that done is we sat down with folks we didn't necessarily agree with and to find out where's the common ground and how can we build on that common ground. So I was very encouraged by what I've seen thus far of late. The fact they came in on a and I said I'm not going to call them back until they had a solution on the capital budget, and they called themselves in. They had the number of votes to call themselves in. They can call themselves in for, you know, a very limited period of time. I can only call them in for, you know, 30 days at a time. Of course, they can gavel out whenever they want to end that clock. But so I was impressed with what they did on coming together on the capital budget. It was one day in and out. And so I think that's a good sign.
And Governor, what are the top three things that you'd have to see? Is it income tax, a restructuring of the permanent fund, and something else that you would have to have put forward in order for you to support it? What are you really looking for?
Well, I'm looking for something that there's nothing we're going to do that's going to automatically say that there's no the deficit's gone. It just can't happen that way, because you pull that lever too hard, you're going to have a negative impact on the economy for sure. But to have the structure in place, whether it's for the revenues, whatever form it might be, to say yes, it's there, and we can make that adjustment at the if need be at the appropriate time. That's really what it's going to take. Whatever form of new revenue it's going to be, it's got to be something that is certainly, as we've talked earlier today, it's got to be fair. It really has to be fair. It has to be equitable. But it also has to be something that's on a broad base. You know, as the only state in the nation without any sort of any broad-based revenues at all, we have to have something that's broad-based. But because we have nothing now, we can certainly look at the one that I think that will create the most fairness. So it may be a combination of several things, Lori. I don't necessarily want to limit ourselves at this moment in time, but now that we sort of catch our breath after we've met the capital, the operating budget, of course, was critical to get that out when we did. The capital budget went out yesterday. So now we can catch our breath and sort of look at what's been said, what's been passed. You know, the House, a majority passed a full fiscal plan. That was not adopted by the Senate, but there's pieces of that we need to look at and see what can be done that's going to have the bipartisan support.
And a significant piece was passed by both houses, although separately, and that is utilizing earnings of the permanent fund in order to meet the significant majority of our revenue needs.
Right.
That is still the cornerstone.
All right. Let's go back to the phones quickly. We only have a couple of minutes left. Dennis is in Kodiak. Hi, Dennis.
Hello there. I'd just like to thank the governors for giving fine examples of what public service is all about. Here in Kodiak, we have a similar tasks that we have to work on with the state. We're dealing with decisions made from the past. And probably the most frustrating thing I hear from Alaskans is, gimme, gimme. We've had it pretty darn good, and anybody that's been here for a while knows that. I urge the leaders and future leaders of every community in this state to consider public service. There's the problems, there's solutions, and, dive in. Don't stick the hand out. Don't expect the state to always be there. But, support your local community, and the best way I know is to public serve it. The second thing is another thank you for establishing the anti-opiate task force. If anybody's not familiar with that, get to know those people. I'm sure every hub in this state could use them, use their influence. But if anybody ever doubted what our governors are capable of, get to know those people and what the miracle and magic can happen when things come together and solutions solved. So a salute to you, and I too was hoping you were going to announce your campaign to seek office again. So a salute to both of you.
Thank you, Dennis, for the comments. Let's quickly go to one more call. Kyle is also in Kodiak. Hi, Kyle. Can you ask a question quickly?
Yes. Thank you, Governor, Lieutenant Governor. The state is experiencing some significant budget challenges, and of course, that trickles down, and the communities, the local communities, are also having to bear more and more of the burden. And some years ago, the state mandated that all municipalities had to provide a senior and veterans exemption for property tax for the first $150,000 in value. And over time, the state has not reimbursed the local communities for those funds. And as we know that more and more of the seniors and veterans are not financially disadvantaged, there is a certain segment of that population of residents that, in fact, are enjoying Cadillac retirement annuities and other benefits of good investing and good business practices that have provided them with an opportunity to have a very comfortable income for the rest of their lives. We are not able to tax those fortunate ones because of the state mandate and placing that burden on our younger generations that are, in some cases, struggling mightily to keep up with the demands.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. I'm going to have to move on here and let the governor respond because we only have about a minute and a half left. Governor, your thoughts about the reimbursement. What Kyle was talking about, either I think he's saying either this municipalities need to be reimbursed or this tax may need to be looked at.
Well, in anything that creates a, what we call an unfunded mandate to municipalities, we look at carefully. Both Lieutenant Governor Milot and I both come from our backgrounds in local government, and so we understand that the deficits roll downhill, and we don't believe that that we should shift. There's enough already enough challenges already in local governments without state obligations going onto them. So, you know, exemptions are some. I know most of them are optional on municipalities that they that whether they would like to enact them or not. Some are not. So, you know, we'll certainly look at those. And again, those are in statute that preceded us, but that doesn't mean we don't look at them and see what and you know, I'll be attending the Alaska Municipal League summer convention in Haines this summer and listen carefully to what, you know, what the local governments, you know, bring to us. We listen carefully to them because they're the ones that are on the front lines. Local governments are and you know, Dennis and thanks very much for your you know, shout out to folks to get involved in the solution. And
all
I think
right.
that's what we need.
All right. Thank you so much to Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Milot for being on the line with us today. We're going to reach out to lawmakers for next week to get their thoughts on the future of the budget and fiscal stability here. Thanks to Eric Bork, our engineer, and Wesley Early on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.